The reason that people get hyper-focused on the cash flow is because it's the only thing they see. Property management companies send them the profit and loss, and they forget about the part that actually creates the wealth, which is not the cash flow. The actual money part of this comes from owning the real estate.
Welcome to the Get Real Podcast, your high-octane boost of full-on reality therapy for personal, business, and investing success with your host, Ron Phillips, because somebody's got to tell it like it is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Get Real Podcast. Ron Phillips, Heather Marchant here at your service. We got an email from one of you, and she will remain nameless, although that probably narrows it down, 50%? We don't really know what the makeup is, but you will know that this is your question out there because you emailed Heather. And what we realized is that we probably spoke a little quick on the eviction episode. And so we want to make up for that mistake right now, at least answer this question. Heather, what is the question?
Yeah. So the question was a scenario question, and it was essentially that the tenant had not paid for a couple months, told the property manager they wanted to get caught up and they had a plan and they were going to get caught up. And she received April rent and then they paid February rent that they owed. So they now only owe March rent. And she said, I listened to the podcast and man, I'm worried I'm not doing this right because you had said to move toward eviction and to not necessarily just listen to my property manager, but kind of think on my own feet. Type of thing. And I said, well, yes, I see how that would maybe make you doubt your situation and what you're doing. But I said, man, it sure sounds like this tenant just fell on hard times, like they said, and they are back and they're paying. And they paid 2 months of rent in 1 month. Like, that's pretty good odds that you're going to get your March rent next month.
I would say it's well above 50% you're going to get your rent. And most people never can do that. So let's be clear. First off, let's be clear about what an eviction is. Let's be clear about the reason we didn't go into this is because the timeline is different in every state.
Yeah.
There isn't a one size fits all to how this thing works. But let's talk through really quick what we meant when we said this. Okay. And let me do that by providing a scenario that is more typical than this so that everybody understands. Typically, what happens is somebody doesn't pay on the first when it's due. And let's say in the state that you can post your notice on the third day. So they post notice that if they don't pay, they're going to start the eviction process. And let's say the state says that's 2 days. So we're on day five. Now we start the eviction process. The thing that I think a lot of people maybe don't understand is that when you start the eviction process, that doesn't mean the person's evicted. It means that the process has started. They're still like days, probably weeks in between that day and when the actual court day is when you're going to get a judgment on that eviction. So at any point in that timeline there, they can bring the money in and stop the eviction process. So what Heather and I were trying to express to you is what normally happens. Well, first off, people don't post on the third. They wait and then...
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah. So property manager doesn't post. And if they don't post, well, then your clock doesn't start until you post.
Well, and the post, Ron, it's a physical posting, at least from what I recall on the couple of evictions I had. They're like physically going out, which is why I think it doesn't happen often because so many people pay late. They'd have to drive around to all these houses and post notice.
Yeah.
And so they wait.
And that is a disservice to you.
Yeah.
Because what typically happens is then these people, they outbound call to these people. Hey, are you guys going to pay? Or they email. And then these people are like, oh, yeah. I'm going to pay. You bet. Like, I pay every month. Of course I'm going to pay. And then the 15th comes, still haven't paid. So they reach out again. Hey, you said you were going to pay. You're not paying. Yeah. Well, let's work out something here. And then they're like, oh, yeah. I'll pay something like Friday. Probably like I can afford to pay like $500 on Friday, right? And then Friday comes around and there's still no money. So now we're potentially on the 20th of the month. There's 20 days has gone by. We've not posted a notice. The clock hasn't started ticking. They still haven't paid. And now they go, well, I guess they're not going to pay. So now they post the 3-day notice. Then after that, whatever the clock is in the state, that's when the clock starts. So you have basically wasted a month. They have lived in your property another month without paying, all because the clock never started running. And what Heather and I were trying to express to you is start the clock the instant that you can start the clock. Because if you don't, you're just wasting time. Mm-hmm. Because in the scenario that this person emailed us about, if they were going to pay anyway, and you started the eviction process and the clock started, no big deal.
Yep.
When they pay, the clock stops, the eviction stops, it's not on their record, nothing happens except for one very, very important thing. Because 90% of the time, they're not going to pay until they know you're serious.
Yes, like the expectation has been set.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is what we meant. Trust your property manager, but also insist on them using the ammunition that they have to make their job easier. They might not think it makes their job easier, but it does.
Yeah, because you're not going to have nearly as many late payments if the tenants all know that the property manager is serious. I agree. The other question, I realized she had one other question, Ron. It was about the partial payments that we talked about. Mm. Accepting partial payments because they were looking at making partial payments to help get caught up. And she's like, well, am I not supposed to accept partial payments? And I said, well, that has to do with accepting payments and it stopping the eviction.
Yeah. Because let's say that you actually did file the eviction. And then these people come back and they're like, well, next Friday on the 20th, which is maybe a week before the eviction date, I can afford like 500 of the 1500 that I owe you. And then I'll pay next week, I'll pay another 500. And then the next week, I'll pay another 500. I'll just keep doing that until we got caught up. The problem with that is if they know how to work the system, they just bought themselves an entire other month for $500 instead of $1,500. Because when you take the 500, the clock stops yet again. So now, if they don't pay you the following week based on their little timeline, you have to file eviction again.
Yes.
So you paid to file eviction the first time. You accepted partial payment. When you did, it stopped the eviction. Now you have to pay to file again. And that's why you don't accept partial payments.
And I think the other point of clarification I had with her was, because this ended up being a phone call, was that people fall on hard times. And our message in like file the eviction is not a cold-hearted message. It's starting that time clock because there's legislation that protects the tenants and also should be protecting you as a landlord to be able to get the people out of your property that aren't paying. And it requires a good amount of time to pass. And so just starting the clock, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a cold-hearted landlord that doesn't allow people to get caught up or what have you. You already alluded to that, Ron, but I think it's an important distinction for people that may be listening to us and feel like it sounds like we're just kick people to the curb as a solution to a problem. I don't think that's how either of us feel.
No. I mean, listen, on all my properties, when we do file eviction, I hope they bring the money. I don't want to turn the unit.
Yeah.
I don't want the expense of turning the unit. I would prefer they pay. But if they don't pay, I would prefer to be able to get them out of there and get somebody who is paying earlier rather than later. And my gosh, if you're in a marketplace where this takes a really long time, you have to start that process because if you don't, you're really going to be screwed because you're starting the clock late and then it's a long process.
Yeah.
And we don't invest in areas like that, but if you are in an area like that, understand what you are doing when you delay the process. It's a big deal.
Yeah, agreed. Man, I think that was good. I like that she was confident and comfortable to reach out and just say, hey, I have some questions.
And feel free because listen, you may think that whatever it is that you have a question about is a stupid question. And we may very well have just talked over half the listening audience. And because you decided to send your question in, now everybody gets the benefit of that answer. So if this helped somebody today, understand that one of your fellow listeners is why you heard that today. And Heather and I thought we made that clear on the first episode. We obviously didn't. We're very glad that the person reached out and had a question. If you do on any of our episodes, man, hit us up. That's why we're here. We definitely want to serve you guys. Show's not for Heather and I, it's for you. So this person treated it like their show, and I really appreciate that. I know Heather does too. So off to another topic, which I think is a happier topic. Eviction's never fun to talk about, but it's necessary sometimes. This one actually is fun to talk about.
Very.
Because the make money part of all of this, which is fantastic, right? So I was at a conference this week. I talked to a lot of people. It was a real estate conference. Mostly it was a property management conference. And one of the things that I realized after talking to a lot of people there is that so many people don't understand the numbers behind real estate. We talk about them on the show often, probably not often enough, because I find so many people don't understand to the degree that they should what they are. But the thing that I wanted to talk about today, and Heather has such a great example of this, is kind of the dichotomy between cash flow and the rest of the returns.
Yeah.
And that people get so hyper-focused on the cash flow number, then they forget about the other numbers. And it's part of the reason that we created this tech piece that we have is because the reason that people get hyper-focused on the cash flow is because it's the only thing they see. Property management companies send them the profit and loss. That's all they know. And they forget about the part that actually creates the wealth, which is not the cash flow. The cash flow runs the business. You want the business to make a little bit of money. At minimum, you want it to break even. You certainly want it to make you a little bit of money. And that's after your cost. That's the reason you have the cash flow. But the actual money part of this comes from owning the real estate and what happens with the other three returns. And I was talking to Heather really briefly before the show, and she has this fantastic example, which is like a current example of this in real life, right? So share it with everybody, Heather.
Yes. So interesting. It came up yesterday talking to a client who had just sold a property that he acquired at the end of 2021. I just actually pulled up my settlement statement because we both bought in the same development, right? And I'm going to just like rewind everyone's brains, I guess, to the time when interest rates were still, my rate is 3.625 on this property, right? Bought at the end of 2021. So it is at a time when it was a feeding frenzy for property.
Yep. It was so hard to get inventory for all of you.
It was so hard.
I mean, it was like, this was also when you could put a property on the market, it would sell in like half hour for more than asking, right?
Yep. This was the time when we would sell property in under 5 minutes. And I had more upset clients than I'd ever had, ever, in working in real estate because they were missing deals.
Yeah, because they couldn't buy anything, crazy enough.
They couldn't buy anything. Yes. So we had a townhome community and the cash flow pretty modest. I wouldn't say this cash flow is super great.
Not life-altering, then, is what I'm hearing.
Not life-altering. It was a base hit, right? It was a get me on base because I want to keep investing. And it's in a market with steady rents and everything else. But rents came in where we projected, and they really haven't moved in the 3 years almost that I've owned this property. They haven't really increased, which is pretty unique. And as everyone listening knows, costs have increased in that time. My insurance has gone up significantly. The HOA dues have gone up. And so it's starting to just shrink my cash flow, right? So I get a notice about 3 weeks ago that says my tenant is breaking lease. He's in the military and he has orders and I need to let him out of the lease and let him move. His lease wasn't supposed to be up until December. And so I looked at my numbers, which I think every time I have a vacancy coming up is a good wake-up call to look at your numbers. And I said, well, this property has been mediocre as far as performance, right? It hasn't been horrible, but it hasn't been like my best performing property. And I said to myself, I wonder what this property is worth right now. What's the market value? I paid just under $140 for it, and it is now worth $160. And selling fast. The agent that I refer clients to out there is selling them very quickly. And that's not hard to guess why, I guess. I mean, the price point.
Yeah, because it's $160,000 and you basically can't find anything for that anywhere.
Yes, exactly. And there's a garage on this. It's a townhome. So anyhow, when I was talking to this client and I was going through that I was probably going to be liquidating, he said to me, yeah, I just sold mine. And man, I made some good money on the sale of that property. And I told him, I said, those properties were in a market where it was hard to get in the game. We got in the game and had a solid base hit. I mean, I would say I'm rounding third base. And once I sell and capture this equity and the principal reduction that I has been sitting in the property.
Yep.
So it's exciting.
And one of the things too that I think, Heather, you and I probably haven't done such a good job of on the show is helping people understand that making money in real estate is by buying real estate and holding real estate. Mm-hmm. Because time is on your side in real estate. You have four different returns. I mean, like I just heard, I mean, everybody on the news is now talking about like, is there a bubble in the stock market? It's like way overpriced. And what happens when it comes down? Well, it's a problem for most people when it comes down because they've made these gains and then they lose these gains. There's no other return. But that's not what happens with real estate. There's four different returns. The cash flow number, that allows you to be able to pay for the things that are wrong on the property, make that business run while someone else is buying the asset for you through your mortgage pay down. Mm-hmm. So on the amortization schedule, somebody's paying your principal off for you, right? You also get to depreciate and the property appreciates in value. And if you're leveraged into the property, those returns are really quite good.
Yeah.
Without the cash flow. That's where all of the wealth is created. That's what Heather's talking about. And this was a really short run that Heather had in the property. And it was in the Midwest where properties really don't appreciate that much.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that we should talk about. I don't think we've ever talked about on the show. We have some people who they're high income earners. They need places to park their money where they have capital preservation, number one. And number two, there's a growth opportunity. And a lot of those markets, the cash flow is not great. Especially right now. Mm-hmm. And they're in properties where they've had really good runs and they don't want to sell. They want to keep those properties and they want to invest in their places. One of the strategies, if you want to keep a property like that, is to buy some cash flow out in another market to offset the break even or some of the negative that you have on that other property so that the business can continue to run and you can continue to get those gains in the other property and the principal pay down and the depreciation and all of the other things. There's so many ways that you can use those because there are four of them. If there weren't, it would be just like the stock market. Like you better sell high and you better buy low because if not, then at some point your gains are going to get chopped in half, but then you got to ride that thing all the way back up. Now, somebody right now out there, maybe you listening, is going to say, well, yeah, Ron, but that happened in between 2008 and 2012. That's what happened in real estate. Well, yes, it did. During that time, someone still paid your principal down. You still got to depreciate the property and you still got cash flow to run the business while you were waiting for the property to come back in value. And it has, and then some. So that's the difference between the stock market and real estate. They both have ups and downs. But there is a corresponding other returns that you get in real estate you don't get in the stock market. You just don't. And I think it's important for people to understand that. We see people all the time who have made huge gains and all they did was own a house for many years. That's literally it. Investment property, personal residence, property, period. Own it. Own it for a long time. You will make a lot of money. That's the way it works.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, my cash flow in my portfolio has ended up being my cash to be able to cover maintenance or vacancy. It's turned into that. And then my gains, you're right, have been the other rates of return. Depreciation has been a huge drive for growing my portfolio. And then adding to it the equity that I have in my properties.
And listen, Heather's super young, folks, but at some point down the road, Heather can take all of that equity that she's gained from trading out these properties and growing the portfolio and all of that. And she could, if she wants to, she could pay cash for however many properties. And then the cash flow actually does make a difference. So there's so many different ways to do this. That's not entirely true. There are wrong ways to do this. We've covered those. So as long as you don't do any of those, there's no right or wrong here with what we're talking about. They're different strategies for doing real estate. And I don't know anybody who's gotten rich off of cash flow. I know people who have gotten wealthy and turned some of that wealth into income by buying houses and paying cash for them. I know that. I know some people who have taken equity from properties, purchased larger commercial properties, and bought them specifically for cash flow, who've done pretty well with income. But I don't know very many people who bought real estate and their biggest win was cash flow.
Yeah.
Even the people who pay cash, still the biggest return is in the other two returns. Of course, if you pay cash, you don't have principal reduction. So you have two returns, not three other returns. But they're still getting their biggest bang for their buck in the other two returns. And the cash flow is super nice. And you can 100% retire on it if you have enough equity, because you can trade it out for this dividend, right? But you don't lose your principal. That's the most brilliant piece of this whole thing. And so the encouragement is buy real estate and hold on to it and just watch what happens. And then, like Heather, if you have a property that just kind of drives you nuts a little bit, it's probably gone up in value. You can sell it and you can do a 1031 exchange, which is a tax deferred exchange into another piece of real estate that you hope is better than the last one that was kind of a pain in the butt. That's how it is.
I will add to the conversation, since you guys have walked along in this journey with me, I did close on my fourplex this week.
I didn't even know that. Congratulations.
I closed and I told my husband, I'm like, until the money comes in and we know it's officially closed and sold, I'm not going to believe it. And that the new person who bought it is owner occupying one of the units. And that's perfect for that property. It is going to be such a home run for them. Yes. And I put in even more money at the sale of the property. I mean, I definitely wasn't walking away from a property that was a dog, but it was a dog for my portfolio. So see you later. That's all I have to say. I'm happy that I've exited that one.
And we should say that it is definitely a thing that you never talk about the money that is going to be in your account after you close. You only talk about the money that is in your account after you close. You can jinx yourself pretty bad. Mm-hmm. I've done it a few times. I'm counting my dollars and then the deal blows up right before you close. That's real estate, folks.
Yeah, for sure. I've talked to a client just recently that was making financial decisions based on having the rental property, and it took a little bit longer to lease than he thought. And it put him in a bad spot because he was counting the chickens before they hatched, right? So making sure that the money is there when it's in your bank account is important.
That is correct. It is not until it's there.
Yes.
It's not yours and it has not closed. So I hope that you've gotten a lot out of both of these points today. The first one, just recapping on the eviction process and what we were trying to say, apparently inartfully. And the second thing on that point is that you literally can email us. You read them, we will respond to them. And if we think it's appropriate for everybody, we're gonna do a show on it. And we did part of the show on this particular question. So please reach out. I mean, we encourage you to do that quite a bit. And then the second piece of the show, man, understand what these numbers really mean. Understand why cash flow is important. Understand it's not the only thing. It is one of four things. It is the thing that kind of makes stuff work, because that's where the top line revenue of the profit and loss statement comes into with the business, right? It is not the wealth creator. So don't confuse those things. And time is your friend in real estate. Time is your friend. Just pull up a compound curve online. Just Google it. Compound curve, click on images, and look at that curve and look how it works over time. That is why time in real estate works so effectively, because you have four returns compounding over time. It is magical. Any final words, Heather?
No, I just, every time when I'm reminded, because my portfolio, I've talked about it, I've had several problems with my portfolio in the last year. And I think it's a great reminder that to keep it in perspective, like you were saying, Ron, with the cash flow is important, but it's one of four rates of return. And I have seen in my own portfolio, almost 10 years investing, which kind of blows my mind how fast time goes, that is where the money is made, is the other rates of return. Cash flow is like minuscule compared to the others.
Absolutely. Well, until next time, get out there and make something happen.
This has been the Get Real Podcast. To subscribe and for more information, including a list of all episodes, go to getrealestatesuccess.com.